I'm Melissa Harris-Perry in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Now, the fear, loss, stress, and isolation of the pandemic has been extraordinarily challenging for our collective mental health. And this is particularly true for teens and adolescents.
Although you would expect it to be less stressful because you'd have more time to do homework, somehow I feel like teachers have been compensating by giving us more work.
For me, homeschooling has been really difficult. I've had a really hard time focusing. I've been handing assignments late. I've been texting my friends during class. It's really quite awful.
Now there have been complaints about too much screen time at my school, so they're cutting class time down and they're dishing out more homework, which isn't great.
These are the voices of teens talking with the women's interest website, SheKnows.com, back in April of 2020, when schools had only been closed for about a month. So nearly 18 months later, the isolation and uncertainty of the pandemic, combined with the pressures to achieve and perform well during the past year, has heightened anxiety, depression, and thoughts of self-harm among teens. A recent op-ed in the New York Times reviews startling results from multiple studies showing that the mental wellness of adolescents has deteriorated significantly. And as students return to in-person classes in the fall, reporting from the Hechinger Report shows that many schools are ill-equipped to handle the decline in mental health. Joining me now is Kate Ricks, Oakland-based freelance writer with the Hechinger Report. Kate, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, Melissa.
And also joining me is Emily Esfani-Smith, who is a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology and the author of The Power of Meaning. Emily, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
So Emily, can you walk us through a bit what the pandemic has meant for the mental health of teens?
So the sad facts are that there was already a mental health crisis among teenagers and adolescents even before the pandemic. Over the last decade, we've seen rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, suicidal thinking rising fairly dramatically among this group of teenagers. And what happened during the pandemic is that all of those trends accelerated. And the question is why? And you know, many teens are suffering, as we heard their voices earlier. They feel very anxious, in particular about academic goals and the pressure to achieve, which strangely has accelerated over the past 16 months. You'd have thought that the pressure would have been alleviated, but that's not what's happened. And that's been a chief cause of their mental health concerns.
It seems to be that part of what's happening in our public discourse right now is this idea that, don't worry, everything will be fine when we go back to normal. But Kate, in your recent reporting, you found that schools aren't necessarily ready to manage this mental health crisis, this increased stress that Emily was just talking about.
That's right, Melissa. What Emily was just saying about teens feeling this pressure to continue to sort of achieve under these very difficult circumstances only highlights the fact that the need for on-site mental health counseling services in public schools, because a lot of times teenagers are in some school districts, like the one where I live in Oakland, California. There are actually school-based health centers where social workers are present, and teens can just walk in and make an appointment to talk to someone, and it's confidential. So if, for example, their parents are a cause of stress in their life, perhaps putting pressure on them that they can't quite meet, the counseling is there for them, and they don't have to ask their parents for help finding counseling. So that, to me, the pandemic, what I found was that the pandemic has, as Emily said, only highlighted how ill-equipped our schools are to meet the need. Because, you know, I'm heard from a psychologist in Chicago Public Schools who said that he's responsible for 4,600 students in his school. He's the only psychologist who works in that school. And they said, you know, he said, I feel like I'm doing triage most days.
Kate, talk to me a little bit more about that sense of students feeling like they don't have the support systems that they need.
The teens that I spoke with were, many of them were actually, you know, teens who you would think would be aware of whatever supports their schools had. The teens that I spoke with included a student vice president in Las Vegas who was unfortunately, you know, lost friends during the pandemic to actually drug overdoses. And this teenager was, you know, informed that their friend had passed away. And then there was really nothing that the school could do to support. There wasn't the staff available to provide grief counseling for students who had lost friends. And this teenager in particular, Caden McKnight, who I quote, wasn't even aware that there are some apps. For example, the district had put in place some apps to help students monitor their mental health that would trigger staff at the district level if that teen reported feeling that they needed help. The teen, you know, Caden wasn't aware that these services existed. So I think that there was a sense that the services are overburdened and stretched, but also the communication to teens themselves about what's available to them during the pandemic were not adequate. And so while districts were aware, the people that I spoke with, definitely aware of the need and doing, in some cases, scrambling to put things together, the communications weren't really in place. And so I heard from multiple students reports of that they didn't know who they would even reach out to if they wanted to talk to someone.
And yet, Emily, they were getting some kind of communication, and the communication they seemed to be getting was, no matter how bad it is, you still got to achieve, you still got to accomplish, you've got to get into these colleges, you've got to get these top grades. How is it that we were failing as communities, as schools, to communicate the resources available, but we're still communicating so much pressure?
It's a great question, and it's kind of a tragic reality. I think, you know, at the bottom of it is the good intentions of teachers and of parents. A lot of people were, you know, thinking about students over the past 16, 17 months, were worried about a year of lost learning, lost milestones. And I can see, with that fear in the background, wanting to encourage students, pressure students to push themselves to continue getting good grades, being involved in extracurricular activities, perhaps in an online format, things like that. But what's really striking is that, you know, students reported in a national survey conducted by the organization Challenge Success that their parents, their expectations during the pandemic didn't, for many of them, their expectations remain the same as before the pandemic. And for many of those parents, their expectations actually increased. And so, even though the parents had a sense that their children were struggling, there was still this demand to perform that was placed on them. And that was very difficult for students. Other research showed that one of the chief predictors of student depression and anxiety during the pandemic was parents' unrealistic expectations placed on their children, and parental criticism as well. And I think part of why we saw that accelerating was simply because parents and kids were spending more time in the home together. And so parents were more likely to kind of be there on top of their children, making sure that they weren't, you know, looking over their shoulders on their laptops, making sure that they weren't, you know, on social media instead of paying attention in class, things like that. So there was this kind of toxic brew of parental criticism, unrealistic expectations, and students lacking sort of autonomy that they would have had under ordinary circumstances, being at school away from the household.
Yeah, I certainly said to girlfriends more than a few times that nature did not intend for us to be 24 hours a day in the house with our teens. Like, there's just no way that is good for either the parents or the kids, right? That need for autonomy and development. But Emily, just quick second on this. Isn't that also in part that we tend to discount teens' feelings? We're like, well, yes, they're emotional, but that's just kind of how teens feel, as opposed to really acknowledging how troubling this time was.
I think that's right. I think that there is this idea that, you know, teenage years are hormonal years, they're difficult years, and the parent's job is to, you know, keep their anchors and keels steady and move them through this period, ensuring that they're achieving the important milestones and goals like academic goals. But of course, I think what we need to remember is that the pandemic was a national and collective stressor, a trauma, you know, as Kate shows in her reporting, many of these students lost their friends to suicide, to drug overdoses, and to dismiss the grief and all of the loss that's arisen over the past 17 years as just the normal emotional upheaval of the teenage period, I think is to do teens a real disservice. And in speaking to them, I've seen a real craving and yearning to have some sort of space and forum, whether it's at home or at school, to process their grief and these losses.
Kate Ricks is an Oakland-based freelance writer with the Hetchinger Report, and Emily Esfani-Smith is a doctoral student in clinical psychology and the author of The Power of Meaning. I also just want to note that if you have a teen who is suffering, or if you know a young person struggling right now, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. It's 1-800-273-8255. Or the crisis text line, text HELLO, H-E-L-L-O, to 741741. 741-741.